Namaste, good morning, good evening. If people are joining from out of India, my name is Sachi Manyar, and I'm really excited to be your host for today's Awaken Talk. The purpose of these Awaken Talks is to share stories that help plant seeds for a more compassionate society while fostering our own inner transformation. We do this by holding collective conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life who inspire us to live in a more service-oriented way. And behind each of these calls is an entire team of service-based volunteers whose invisible work allows us to hold this space. Today, our special guest is Ravi Gulati and Professor Anil Gupta, two amazing people who I am also very much inspired by. Thank you everyone for joining the call. So let us begin with a minute of silence to anchor ourselves into this space and be present to the conversation. Thank you again for joining our call today. Welcome back. Again, thank you for joining the call. Before we begin the conversation, I'll just quickly explain the format of today's call. We will be together in conversation for 90 minutes. The conversation will be moderated by Professor Anil Gupta and with Ravi Gulati. And the last 30 minutes, that will be for 1 hour. And the last 30 minutes, we will invite questions from anyone in the audience who would like to ask any questions to Ravi Bhaiya. You can submit your questions in the comment section on our webcast form or on our live stream, or you can just email your questions to ask@servicespace.org. That is ask@servicespace.org. So with that, without wasting much time, I'd like to introduce first Professor Anil Gupta and then Ravi Bhaiya. So, Professor Anil Gupta is a name that you just hear and you know him, and a lot of people know him, but he may not know that a lot of people know him. For us young people, we know him through the Honeybee Network and the Shodh Yatra, which has always been a dream to be a part of the Shodh Yatra. He is a visiting faculty at IIM Ahmedabad and IIT Bombay, has started many innovative courses like Shodh Yatra. Basically interested in frugal rural innovation. He's also a Padmashri awardee and regarded as a pioneer in the field of grassroots innovations. So thank you, sir, for accepting our invitation and being once again ready to ask very tough questions to Ravi Bhaiya. We are looking forward to it. Ravi Gulati, who I fondly call Ravi Bhaiya, is the co-founder and he calls himself the chief executive volunteer of Manzil, which is a Delhi-based organization. Manzil was started in Khan Market in 1998. And after completing his education at IIM Ahmedabad, he decided to take the path less traveled and start a school or a learning community for children, where right now there are over 20,000 children who are in the alumni network alone of Manzil. Apart from that, there are so many organizations, so many ripples that have spawned off Manzil. There are so many social entrepreneurship initiatives, which you can read all about on the intro page of Awaken Talks as well as Manzil. But I'm going to share a little bit of a personal intro. So anyone who's been to Manzil is not an organization, it's a community. And to me, it's not a destination, but a place where a lot of young people got a lot of rest. A place where they could reflect, they could ask questions, they could be confused. And whether you were a part of Manzil or not, Manzil always remained that space, that very sacred space for young people, including me. And although my time with Manzil has been very short, it always felt like I was coming home. Similarly, Ravi Bhaiya himself is not a person alone. Not just a mentor, not just what we want to box him as. He's an experience. For me, every time I live in Mumbai, so every time I had to go meet Ravi Bhaiya, every time I was in Delhi, it was almost like I had to give darshan to him. just because I know he would say something, he would do something which would just forward my journey and help me with all the things that I was seeking. And our conversation, even if it was just 2 hours, it would not just be in his home. It would be eating parathas. It would be in the Lodi garden. It would be coming back. So he's a full surprise package that he's and so open, so amazing that it is almost impossible to miss him in Delhi. And for me, it's a very, very big honor to be the host of this call today. So thank you so much, everyone. And thank you, Ravi Bhaiya, once again for accepting our invitation to speak today. With this and without me wasting much time, I'll hand it over to Professor Anil Gupta to do all that you do always. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Sachi. Thank you. You know, I'm looking at the painting behind Ravi and there is a ship there. Now, ships are not meant to anchor on the shore. They are meant to move around. And Ravi has been moving around. He was never a settled person in that true sense of the term. He was always unsettled. I have known him as a student. And I will ask him, Ravi, you define Manzil as not a destination, but a journey. And how did your journey begin, Ravi? What was the movement which sort of increased your degree of uneasiness? And you said, all right, this is the movement I was waiting for. And now I take off. The ship sails into the unknown waters. And that's the beauty of the painting behind you. And I want to follow the ship.
Namaskar, sir. Well, you have played a major role in that. Let me just start with the sort of foundation. I think family plays a major role in ways that we don't even realize at the time. Right? It kind of builds the soil, which is now ready for the seed then that can sprout. And for me, both my parents have been huge influences. And then I have this special sister, older than me, 7 years older, mentally challenged, people would say. But in many ways, quite astute emotionally. You've met her, you know her. Sachi has met her. It's different. And what her coming into our family did was also kind of unsettling. I think in any family where there's a special child that's born, it changes things. And I think that's an important thing that sets that soil. From the time I sort of gained consciousness as a little boy, jaise kehte na, hosh sambhala, I saw that both my parents were out to work, but one was bringing in money, the other was not. But their work was equally important to them. And I think somewhere this idea that work has to be delinked from what you're earning out of it. That's kind of price, but that's not value. And we always make that confusion that price is value. And so that came in, I didn't even realize, but it kind of seeped in into me. And the other thing that I don't know why, but it bothered me from childhood was seeing inequality around me and how people have different starting lines. So if we say capitalism is a merit-based system, then why don't we have the same starting line? Why do we have the system of inheritance at all? Those are the questions that bothered me. Those are the questions I would not have the courage to talk about also as a child. I was shy. My best friends didn't know what was going on in my mind. I was very introverted. A lot of introspection, but all introverted. And then I was, like upper middle class, just looking at career because that's what the family was saying. Do well, get into a good place.
So when you were in the dorms, the student must have been making fun of you then. Sometimes they must have been cutting jokes at your cost.
Yeah, I think by the time I came to IIM Ahmedabad, I had learned some of the other things to be a little charming, I think. So I started to learn to play the guitar. Of course, they made fun of my guitaring because I was very slow and I would, stop in the middle of a song to change chords.
Okay. Yeah.
So, but, I think that was not so much of an issue. They saw me as different, I think. But there was an exception.
So when did the chord of your life got changed? Just like a guitar, you will change in between. When did you stop music and I said, look, now I changed course.
That was a combination of two things. So one senior of mine in IIM Ahmedabad, who was Shobhana Madhavan, who was very impressed by her knowledge, vast knowledge of things. So I would, you know, chat her up all the time and ask her questions and marvel at, you know, the things she would show me. And for the first time, I learned about the existence of NGOs. So this is way back in 1990. And my upbringing, this had not never come to my exposure. I'd never heard about it. And she was actually looking for a final placement in an NGO. Again, unheard of at that time. I mean, very rarely people would do that. You were helping her, sir, in figuring that out. When I heard about the kind of work she would do, I questioned her, what are you going to do, really, actually? And when she told me, I was like, are such jobs, do they exist? That's great. I could get to travel. I could do something about this kida, this thing in my head, be in my bonnet, that there's this inequality in the world and you have all the privilege. So I could do something about that. And I could also make a living. So all of this would be taken care of. This is great. And why should I wait 1 year? You know, you're a senior of mine 1 year. Why should I wait 1 year? I have summer training coming up, which is mandatory. Why don't I get summer training in an NGO? I'll get to taste it, touch the waters. It's a 2-month thing. And I landed up at your doorstep, Wing 13, the famous office of yours. I landed up there. I was actually a little nervous. It was very impulsive, unthought sort of decision of mine. Let me not say impulsive, because there was a lot in my childhood that had prepared me for it. But it was an untested, totally untested. And I was half ready. Actually, I would say 80% ready for a really tough grilling from you. And it was a really pleasant surprise that the trust and belief in me that I encountered that day, experienced that day, where all you did was you just laid out many different options of NGOs. Now, for me, that was like, I thought it's like people say, no, Indian food. Somebody who lives abroad says Indian food. But when they come to India, they say there's no such thing as Indian food. There's so much diversity here. I had exactly the same feeling that there's so much. And how do I pick? I want to do all of this. You know, young person, just 21 years old. I want to taste everything. How do I do that? And I had to pick something. Those days, Tiri Dam controversy was a big one. It was coming in the paper. So I'd heard something about it. And you have said something like ecological struggles. And I asked you a bit more, what is that? And then when you explained, I just picked that. And I still very vividly recall, you just, you know, turned back to the phone. You called up the head of IGSS, Mr. Adi Patel, and you spoke to him right there and then. I'm going to send my student and I'm going to tell my placement office. We're going to organize all that. And he's coming. And I landed up in Delhi in a program in IGSS, which usually happens in the summer vacation. Now, IMA follows its own timetable. So I landed there 1 month in advance. The orientation program was going to happen 1 month later. The people on the ground who were to manage me had no clue how to handle something like me. And they also, anyway, they threw me into the deep end. I landed up in this region called Ghad Kshetra in the foothills of Shivalik, where there was a struggle going on around minor forest produce. Things that we had studied with you and had studied before a little bit. But they were really real for me there. And I think that 1 month there and the 1 month in Odisha that I spent, those 2 months, were a huge influence on my life, which is why I've now become a big advocate of being thrown into the deep end of the pool at the age of 20, 21, and take that 1 year off and really get exposed to things which we think we are exposed to because we're reading about it in books. But it's very, very different. The map is not the terrain.
You hadn't thought about Manzil. Manzil happened, isn't it?
That's
how did it happen?
Yeah, so the 2 months of travel was like something that really, I thought that was my real learning. I got into real learning. And I thought I need to travel more. And then with a country like India, it probably takes a few lifetimes to see and to experience everything.
True.
So I actually spent about 3-4 years just traveling. So a lot of people think there's no gap between the two. And I did it for, you know, starting Manzil. That's not how it happened. I worked 8 months in Canada. That was also part of the travel bug. So why not see, if I was getting an opportunity, why not see other cultures, other parts? But over there, one thing that bothered me all the time was, I've come halfway around the world to travel, but I've not seen my own country. It's a little absurd. So one of the things that was, again, working on me was, I'm going to save money because I was working there. I'm going to save money and use that money to go back and travel and not have to work to earn so that I could be free. And that's what I did for about 3-4 months. In that time, I came across a book, Fukuoka, One Straw Revolution. that suddenly, you know, that hit me as this is the right way to live. So I started dreaming of being a farmer. I actually started working on that. In the middle, my father got unwell. I took care of
him. You have been
him.
Farming young souls anyway. You have been a farmer. You have been farming souls, not seeds. And you have been sowing seeds of amazing ideas, Sanchi. Just one of them. But there are many seeds that you have sown. So which was the first seed you sowed?
I don't know. I was just responding to what was happening to me. So while I was planning to move to the mountains to start farming, these two boys came to my mother. They didn't even come to me. And why my mother is because she was known in the neighborhood as someone who's, you know, always ready to help people. Always. And for her, there's no such thing as a stranger or someone I know. She would come back, you know, she would meet somebody at the bus stop, come home and start calling up. And I'd say, what are you doing? And she's like, some person needs a job. I'm looking for a job for them. So she would call up, I don't know how many people to get a job. And sometimes that person wouldn't even show up for the job. We say this, no? Gavat chust tar muddai sust.
Muddai sust.
With my mother, that's true all the time. She's like ahead of the person she's trying to help. Anyway, so these two children came looking for help in maths. And she could help class 8 maths. And I happened to be in Delhi at the time. So she just said, Ravi, why don't you help them? They need help and, you know, you should. And I was happy to help. But I realized that they didn't really know the basics. They were in 8 somehow. I don't know how. But, you know, things like negative numbers, what do they really mean? They didn't understand. And then I gave them another test, which is not from the textbook. Other things, because maths had been always a, you know, subject I'd had fun with. Learned a lot outside of the subject, school subject as well. And I saw that things that people find hard to understand, they got very easily. So that was a strange kind of juxtaposition that they're pretty smart, mathematically minded, and yet they don't know simple things. Clearly, you know, the institutions that they went to didn't do justice to them. Maybe didn't teach it properly. I got excited about doing that because of my loyalty to maths, not so much to the children at that time.
Oh, nice.
I believe that anybody can learn maths. It's so simple. And you don't have to practice. People would say you have to practice to do maths. And I said, you don't have to practice. You just have to get the logic. And so I said, I'll help you. But you're going to fail in your exam for sure. Because that's a month later. And we're going to start with class 3 work. You're in 8. And I can't be, you know, disloyal to maths and just do a paint job on a crumbling wall. That my heart, you know, my zamir, my conscience won't allow that. So go to someone else. I tried to discourage them. I said, go to someone else who will help you pass. I actually give credit to Hemant, the boy, who said, no, bhaiya, we learned from you. And he said it so confidently at 12 years of age. I often wondered after that how could he be so confident when I'm saying you're definitely going to fail? And what I figured out is that, you know, he struck a chord. There was a relationship that got built up. And I've come to the firm conclusion now that teaching content is later. The first thing between a teacher and a student is a relationship. Mm-hmm. If there is a connection, there is a bond, there'll be things flowing both ways and a lot of unpredictable things as well. So we have to focus. And like Foucault also says in that book, he says, growing crops is tending to the soil, not tending to the crops. You just have to tend to the soil. So we have to tend to our relationships. That's, I think, my learning from that. And it really started from there. You know, they were learning maths. They brought their friends. But the friends came at a different time as a new friend came in. And I started with board maths because I thought that was very basic. They didn't have had a clue. That why should we multiply first? Sometimes they would multiply first, sometimes they would add first and get different answers and then not be able to figure out why that is happening. So I talked of conventions and got them, you know, ready for that. But when somebody new would come, I'd say, okay, I'll do board maths again. And then Hemant protested, what is this? We are not moving forward, you know. We are always doing the same thing. So I said, you're right, but we also have to take care of this person who's come. We can't leave him behind. So why don't you teach? Uh-huh. And his point was, no, I can't teach. But you just said you understood it. That's why you want me to move forward. I've understood it, but I can't teach. Wait a minute. If you've understood it and you can't teach, maybe it's not complete understanding. Well, try at least. I'm there. Nothing will go wrong. And that also sowed. So what I'm saying is the ideas came just from responding to that situation in a very living, organic, sahaj way.
So, yeah, you never had teachers, actually. You developed the system where seniors taught the juniors, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember that for a long time that was the case.
Yeah. Also, at that time, I had this very strong sort of anti-money kind of a, you know, what should I say, fad or thing, that idealism, that why is money needed, right?
But so Ravi, you were also teaching something else. You know, when I have been to your place with the students around, I noticed that they could touch, feel, disturb anything in your place. I mean, there was nothing out of bound for these students. There was no space in the house which they could not intrude into, be it almirahs, be it the place over the trunk, be it the, near the sofa, be it the dining table small, or in the room where they wanted to play music. I mean, your beds are lying there and they could just ride over them. So a small kid will just play on them. So how did you dissolve this? And I'm sure Sonia has played a role, because I found her vying for attention at the same time when you're paying attention to them. So she would sometimes complain. But then children develop a very good accord, very good rapport with her. So you have dissolved the space between private and public. And to that extent, you are my ideal, because I couldn't do that much as you have done. You could really make children in your home feel that this home belonged to them. The kitchen belonged to them. They could go and do anything. And your mother, I must say, of course, have played a role. But if you had been a little hesitant, she wouldn't have possibly imposed her views on you. So how did that happen? It didn't happen in one day, I'm sure. But how did it happen?
I've always, you know, grown up in a house like that. So I remember distinctly as a child, some elder would come to a house. My father would give his bed up and sleep on the ground. My father would sleep there. So we never had private spaces. I never had a room to myself. And we would always, shift around, and everything was open for everyone. In fact, the person who cooked for us was with us for 40 years, and the whole house was left on him. Everything open, nothing was locked. So this is something, I think it came to me as a virasat, and it was very natural for me as well to continue that. I don't think I thought much about it. Of course, I agree Sonia played a role. Sonia's role is that she really doesn't have a conception of, like, who's in my intimate circle and who's not. That kind of thing doesn't exist for her. And what are the relations? And she has no idea of social hierarchy at all. You know, the watchman would know when I get married. And a new watchman would come, would also get that information, because everybody is her own. So I think that's, yes, that happened in a house. But that I would give all the credit to what came before me. And it just seeped into me also.
So the reason I'm saying this is that Manjil was not teaching, or is not teaching even today, just the skills. That will be gross undervaluation or underestimation of its potential. It's also teaching life values. And values are not taught, they are lived. So can you give some more illustrations about when different dilemma arose, and somehow, you know, they were bared out before the students, and they could somehow internalize them, and maybe they advised you sometimes?
Yeah, there were, difficulties running this from home. You know, there was a time in a small house, there'd be like 50 kids at any time, at any point of time. And while Sonia, my sister, can be very, affectionate, very caring, she can also be, no, I want to do this. And don't come here and don't talk to this person, because she's a little jealous. All of that also happens. So what we were doing, it was all out in the open, like you said, it's all out in the open. What we were doing is managing the situation without placing somebody at a higher level. So not just because it's my sister. In any case, often I saw my students would actually give her a little higher level because of her being special. And therefore they had that empathy and that understanding that it's all right. And she's also older, right? All of that would happen. I would try to make it equal, that impartiality.
So you think that the special need children ought to be integrated with the normal classes?
I think so.
Do you advise that?
I would advise that, yes. And I think that's also the thinking now. I think it's come a full circle from putting them separately in special sections to now integrating them. And I'm very happy for that. It's very challenging. It's not easy. And we see that in my house. And Sonia is not as challenging as some of them can be, you know, when we look at compare. But I think it's important. It slows people down. It slows what you're trying to do. But I think we're just worshipping speed unnecessarily. In human society.
Tell us about some of the students of your early batches. What have they done in life? And the ones that you're proud of.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're proud of all of them, but I mean, you know, we all play this game. We always claim that we are fair to everybody, and yet there are favorites. So you are my favorite. So I'm sure there are some who will be your favorites. And I think let us be open about it. I mean, maybe they touched your heart. Maybe they questioned you harder. Maybe they defied you more for whatever reason.
I have a big bias towards people who choose to do things for social good. And at a sort of personal cost, which is eventually not a personal cost because it's much more enriching. I think the people who, you know, spend a lot of time earning money, dedicate or allocate a lot of time earning money, are people who actually are the ones who are sacrificing a lot, and not people like me who don't think about that so much. So I have a partiality towards that. So students of mine who set up, who either work in nonprofits or who set up nonprofits, many of them have now, or who have chosen, even in a for-profit, something that is really meaningful, and you know, build their lives around that. Of course,
I heard a band at your place. You know, tell me about that. I was so happy. So it is so enchanting memory of they all playing their own thing, and you know. At one time, my mother also joined, and you know, she probably sang something or whatever. Tell me about that band. And yeah, there was several, I think more than one band came up.
By now, about 10 bands have come.
Wow. Just tell us about that.
Yeah. So the story goes back to, you know, when we started classes in maths, like I shared. And then very soon I realized that one of the things that these children don't are feeling, you know, sort of feel underconfident and go into a shell, is when they're surrounded by people who speak very fluently in English.
Yes.
And they start to feel inferior. And so I said, you know, we can't beat them because I'd seen all my life, you know, we are not going to really move into Indian languages. There's, you know, so I said, why don't you learn English and also not leave your languages behind, but you should be at an equal footing with everyone. So we started spoken English classes. When I bought my first computer, which was just a year or 2 years after the first boys came, I said, why don't you learn on that? So this is how it progressed. But at one point they said, bhaiya, we have difficulties in subjects like geography, history. We can't remember things, remember dates. Please help us there. By now I knew enough that, you know, all this memorizing and passing exam, that's not learning. That's, you know, we spend so much time getting these degrees. But I was not at all excited about that. I said, you know, you'll figure that out. That I don't want to, you know, spend more time on that. What do you want to learn? Let's look at that and let's bring that. And surprisingly, the thing they came up with, we want to learn music. And now I think it's not so surprising. It's, you know, we are a very musical society. The
Indian, yes, society. Indeed.
Who else creates a game like Antakshari? I don't think any culture in the world has done that. And everybody knows it. So their thing was, we want to learn music. Now, there's nobody to teach music. But one thing I, you know, kind of my response to that was, you all know different things, you know different songs. Why don't we at least come together, set a time, and space is my house, but just a corner, you decide where you want to be, and set a time, and let's meet regularly. If we do that, then we'll teach each other, and we'll all increase our learning without having an external teacher. So they started doing that. Then something very interesting happened. You know how serendipity works.
Right.
Somebody invited me to talk to a class of psychology students in LSR College, Lady Shriram College. So I went, and when I talked to them, one girl came to me who had completed last year, graduated a year before. And she said, I am very interested in looking at NGOs and I would like to come visit. So I called her to my English class. And these students were there in the English class. And by now they'd become, you know, very confident and they would talk to anybody at an equal sort of level. So they started questioning her back. Didi, what do you do in your life? So she explained. And then she said, they also asked, what else do you do? So she said, I learn classical music. So they were like, we want to learn music. Can you come and teach us? And she said, but I'm learning myself. I can't really teach. Does that ring a bell, sir? Conversation with Hemant.
Exactly.
So then Hemant was there in that session and he told her, he said, what's your problem? When do you have your class? Every Wednesday. Then you come every Thursday. Teach us whatever you learn on Wednesday. You teach us on Thursday.
And you will practice in the process. And if you understand, then you can teach and all of that. Dialogue got repeated. Oh, my God. Wow.
She was like, wow, I never thought of it like that. And sure, I'd love to do that. And she was really committed. She came for a whole year, every Thursday.
Wow.
And they learned a lot from that, right? And they went up level. And then more people wanted to learn and they became teachers. And so it's an open community. You know, we invite everybody.
Tell me
to
about
come.
The first disc they cut. There was a disc that they cut. You know, I remember that. Tell me that.
The first song that came out was, the first City magazine, I think it's closed now, but the first City magazine heard them in a performance at Habitat Center. Ah. And they were very impressed. And they were coming up with a CD of 10 upcoming bands from Delhi.
Right.
And they asked me that, would they, give us a song and we put it in that CD and we'll distribute it. And I said, we don't have the money, because we were running Manzil without money at that time.
Yes.
We don't have the money to, you know, record the song professionally. They were so keen to have us that we were the only band. They said, we'll pay for, but we have to include them. And they had that song. It's a beautiful song. They, Jeetenge Bazi Ek Din, written by that first group. It eventually called itself Ekam Satyam. Hemant was part of it. And beautiful tune, composed by them, sung by them, you know, the lyrics.
And there was one more they did, no? There was one more, I think.
Yeah, after that, it started a series. Yeah, Neeraj Arya's Kabir Band has its CD, and Minzil Mystics has its CD, and so many things have come out after that. But that was the first one that made people think, we can also do this. It's not that we go somewhere else and look at a band and, wow, what great music. We can play that music, provided we have the opportunity. And the role models were all inside Manzil, because other people. So we have today, at any given time, we maybe have about 100 guitarists available for us, right? Anytime. And all of them started with this one student who was in Ekam Satyam band, Vinay, who was the teacher. And then the series of teachers, his student became a teacher and his student became a teacher. And it's been going on like that even now. It's been 23 years. But the next generation takes over, and it's beautiful to see.
So it must have been very satisfying to you that you had them with you, and then you made them perform publicly. Even Sonia performed publicly once, isn't it? Tell us a little bit about that. I'm very touched by that performance. I don't know. I think it was part of Manzil in some sense of the term, because she got confidence by looking at these kids, and isn't it?
I think Sonia's confidence gives people confidence.
Yeah.
No, I would give credit to my mother for the amount of confidence she has. You know, we'll be in a big hall, and somebody has, done something, lots of people, 1,000 people in the hall, and say, any questions from the audience, and Sonia's hand would go up first. Like, all of us would think, is my question?
And what she may ask, you don't know, and she might have asked you.
But there is something connected to special children there.
Tell us about that performance.
I remember that time she told Rishi.
Because when you told me that, when you explained to me that one act performance, where she shared her predicaments, her experiences, her feelings in a very subtle way. I mean, I think that must have been one of the most cathartic moment for all of you. So tell us a little bit. Because I think society doesn't appreciate that special need people think so much about themselves and about the world around them. I think that, just tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so I would give credit to Walter Peter, who's actually based in Ahmedabad, sir, now.
He has been in touch with me, yes. So and he, in fact, teaches music to people around. I mean, that's what he does, it seems. Yeah.
So he's an old friend. Mm. And he would come home. You know, my place of meeting everybody was home. And he does theater, right? So Sonia has this habit of whoever comes says, work with me. You know, do theater with me. If you make a film on me. If you write a book on me. That's her level of confidence. So it was really her pestering Peter that do some play with me. He eventually had to give in. He would say always, I will do one day. Sonia, one day I'll do. But eventually he had to do. And he and Vibha Chibbar, who's again a friend of his, and eventually Vibha Chibbar took it over. But she worked with Sonia. I remember she used to go to my Bua's house because she wanted this time alone and not be in front of everyone while she was practicing. And it was a process theater kind of a thing. So a lot of it was based on dialogue with Sonia and Vibha Chibbar, dialoguing with each other. Vibha was asking a lot of questions and Sonia would give answers. And with that, she sort of developed a script from what Sonia herself shared, from her own life and her own predicaments, what bothers her, what makes her happy, what is her aspiration, dream, her comparison with other friends, you know, special, non-special. All of that came out in that script. Of course, the script was put together by Vibha, because Sonia give all that raw material, but it had to be put in a form which would work theatrically. Then another problem came up. Sonia would forget her lines and say something else. And in the play, there was some you know, suspense element that would suddenly something punchline would come. But if she would say it at a wrong time, that would all, you know, go, it would not really work. So there had to be a solution to that. And we had one of our students, Anish, early student, who was interested in theater. In fact, he's gone on to become a theater teacher in a very good school now, but and married to somebody who's also in theater. But Anish was very young then, maybe, I don't know, 15 years old or something. And Anish was given a role in that. It was supposed to be a solo play, but he had a role of being on stage and suddenly asking, like sitting on a desk behind, he would ask a question of Sonia. Did he tell us about that? And kind of prod her further there. Yeah. As a you know, theatrical technique, it really worked well. What happened was that if she really had surprise on her face when she was answering,
and tell us, not a made up a tell us a sentence of her. If you recall something that moved you that day.
Yeah, so in the story, she talks about a friend who, unlike Sonia has some physical, visible handicaps as well, you know, right hand, right leg, don't work fully. But this friend of hers was physically like perfect. Nobody could make out. And the family got her married. Because this is, I would say, unfortunately, one big thing of Indian society is shaadi honi chahiye. Wo nahi hui toh complete nahi hai. So she had gotten, you know, gotten married. And there are expectations. Again, sometimes the expectations are not very sensitive expectations given the person who's come in. And that marriage didn't work out. And she had to come back to her parents' home. Really distressing. And the atmosphere in the house at a failed marriage was also very bad. So one is that we must marry, and then when it doesn't work out, then we have to, you know, all our life sort of brood over it and create that bad environment. So Sonia had these sort of mixed feelings about that. She was jealous because Sonia till today, she's almost 60 years old, but till today she perks up on the mention of marriage. And that's why she likes to inform everyone that I've gotten married. I got married late. So she loves to tell people. Because marriage has become a big thing for her as well. So she was jealous. And she brings this into the play. She talks about her friend getting married. In fact, the play starts with her, you know, wearing all the sort of womanly stuff. It's a bit stereotyped as well at points. Of the chudis and the covering the head and all that. And I want to get married. And she's actually just dreaming that part. That's not something that has actually happened. And she's jealous of her friend who her parents have married off. So she sometimes tells my mother, "Meri shaadi kyun nahi karai?" But later, as the story of that girl progresses, and she finds out almost at the end that girl has come back to her home, and what is she facing there? Actually, that girl is no more. I mean, girl, woman, she's no more. And but in the story, it was done a little early. It was, you know, that she's gone. She has a very, you know, it's a strange feeling that's difficult to even express in words. It was coming in the emotion because she really got into her character, which is actually her, not a new character. Of how does she feel about the person she was, who's a best friend, but she was jealous about her having gotten married and she didn't get married. And at the same time, now that marriage has failed, it's a best friend who's suffering. But she got that marriage experience that she didn't get. It's a very mixed feeling, if you can imagine. And I can't describe it, but it was, you know, in her face. And for me, it was that whole play, actually. I wouldn't just take that moment. The way it progressed and how Sonia did it. I broke down when, you know, the family was called on stage. I'm still getting that feeling now, that same feeling.
Ravi, this is a very intense, I wanted you to be in this mood of samvedana. Samvedana of Sonia is actually samvedana, in some sense, metaphorically speaking, of Manzil. Samvedana that your family has imbued you with, and you have imbued that samvedana. Sam means equal, vedana means pain. When somebody else's pain bothers you as much as that person feels it, it doesn't remain that person's pain, it becomes your pain, isn't it? Now, I have met many of your students, and to what extent and how satisfied you are in embedding this samvedana in your students? And can you recall some examples where they have, gone beyond your expectations?
There are many. I think the very basic thing of how they're always ready to share their learning, and people are always, you know, ready to become teachers. Sometimes they have to fight at home. Unfortunately enough, in our, you know, Indian families these days, there's this sort of binary that exists, that it's time for you to learn. Why are you bothering to teach? You should be learning right now. Not seeing that how teaching helps the person themselves. And sometimes the children fight to be able to teach at Manzil, to share their knowledge. And being able to set aside that insecurity that again comes, seeps in from our culture generally, that the people you're teaching may get ahead of you. And why are you doing that? You know, why are you creating competition for yourself? I mean, look at the bands themselves. In a way, they're competing with each other for the same pie. But there is that, you know, caring for each other that is, I think, generally overall higher than what we see around us. So it's there a lot. So that, I think, is something that really, you know, makes me happy and proud. Specific instances have been, you know, the kind of, even when you start a, you know, a band, you're thinking about what can you do for others. I look at Neeraj also. He's always looking at what bands can he help, for the bands can he help. And he's been talking about one a lot with me, that he'd like to support them. Comes forward to help Mystics here. Mystics comes forward to help Mantash, which is the latest band that has come out. Mystics has started a whole program of learning, Manzil Mystics, learning through music in government schools.
Now,
yes.
So, tell us more about that, yeah.
So the people who started it, co-founded, all Manzilians, they didn't have a chance to learn music in their school, which is the government schools in Delhi. And they had that empathy that we got a chance to learn at Manzil. Can we take it to children in our school? So they started going to schools. Now, schools are more interested in what will come out of it. So there was, they developed something called learning through music. So life skills, so one of the people, founders, is a nurse. And so she brought in the whole idea of, for girls, menstruation, reproductive health, you know, questions around that. How can you do that through music? So Vibhor is the kind of thing they've created. It's a non-profit now, separate from Manzil. I'm really proud to say their budget is, I think, 5 times bigger than Manzil's. And so many people are involved. So much music they produce, good music. The latest is a song called Ummeed Hai. I wish I could play it. I'm sure we will find it on YouTube. So there's...
Neha or somebody, Sanchi, can you put it out? I mean, just for a minute, if you can play after this conversation or after this particular moment, because
sure,
I think if
sure.
you're talking about music and if you can't play music, what's the point we are talking about?
Sure,
you
sir,
must
sure,
experience sir. That feeling. So if you can just go around and find out, Ummeed Hai, for a second to us, for a minute, to, you know, if you can do that, that'd be wonderful.
Anurag can get it for you, Sachi. If you have his number, just check with him.
Well, she will search it. She should search it and find it. She's smart. She's your student, after all. What are you talking about? Sachi, you can't fail your teacher. So tell us then what happened. So they go school to school and teach?
So they can't go to, there's a regular schedule. So there are a few schools that they've selected and they go and work with them. Now, in fact, they're involved in making a bus. So moving sort of studio, recording studio, as well as the performance space.
Oh.
So it's happening right now as we
first
talk.
Of its kind, to my mind. Is there anything of this kind before?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't know.
I mean, I'm supposed to know a lot, but I've not heard of it. So this is beautiful, isn't it? This will be
yes.
beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes. So can you play this?
Yes, sir. We've got the song.
So please play it for us for a minute and then we will talk further. I mean, we should celebrate this spirit of music and education and inclusion, all the three,
yeah.
in such a beautiful manner. So let's hear.
कुछ नए से ख्वाब हैं हम थे कि जैसे जेल में आजादियों के ख्वाब हैं जो हो रहा सो हो गया
Wonderful, wonderful. You know, it has energized me so much, Ravi. I can't explain to you. I know I didn't warn you before, but I think spontaneity. You began with the word Sahaj Bhav, and that is what I wanted all of us to experience at this moment. Tell us more about this effort now. Please tell us more about it.
Yeah, so it's a strange feeling watching this video because I'm a six-month-old father and I'm a grandfather as well at the same time. Yeah, these are all children that Manzil Mystics works with. And in fact, they auditioned a large number of children from the government school system here in Delhi and auditioned them. And from them, this Delhi choir has come out and they've written this song.
These kids?
It's the kids have written the song. So actually, Manzil Mystics has a beautiful format for getting people to write songs. You know, it's not fully put together by them, but the thoughts and ideas and the sentiments, even the words, are collected from a group.
So friends, if you want to be part of this music ever, you will have to come and live on the street for a while. Because only those kids can be part of this music. So try learning, living on streets and be an ordinary person and then feel that feel. Because you can't bring this music otherwise. I mean, how can you bring this music out? It's not something in an act play. They are being very authentic. And the way they were resonating and they were creating this, I mean, I think this, you're also telling us that Samvedana has to be lived through. I mean, you cannot just bring it out by choreographing it. Cinematographers try to do that, but I think this music is much more authentic. Because it is by the kids who have to have this hope. So how many such bands are there who are participating in education? Do they go to school by fixing some time with a teacher? Or how do they organize this?
Yeah, so it's fixing up with the system. So it's in working in SDMC system right now. They're trying to do with DOE, which is the Delhi government system, and the bus will go there. So yeah, there's a time fix.
And they bought this bus from their own by fundraising?
Yeah, they fundraised for it. And it's in fact from SBI CAPS that they've just got a big project. It's like...
Wonderful. Thank you, SBI CAP, for the support for these kids, because we really appreciate such gestures of supporting young kids and young people who are trying to chart out new paths. And thank you. That's right. And you're proud that they have got 5 times budget than you.
Yeah.
How many such enterprises, social or cultural or, you know, one thing which I have always felt, I want to divert a little bit of subject. Many times people talk about social enterprises and they have this notion, and I think it is much more dominant in the West, but also in India, that social enterprise is something where you recover the cost. These kids are not recovering the cost of performance from the kids in their school, isn't it? Somebody else is paying.
Yeah, somebody else.
And there is no less entrepreneurial spirit in that.
That's right.
So I would like you to reflect on such enterprises where the users, the people who benefit from the service don't pay for it.
Yeah, so it's a mix that has come out of Manzil. There are for-profits and non-profits both. We also don't get into this debate of...
No. I just want
for-profit for social...
Yeah, but please explain to both of you.
Yeah. So we have about 9 right now. In fact, they come together on something called the Entrepreneur Cell, for which I have to thank my batchmate, Sridhar. because he recognized, working in private equity, he recognized...
Who?
Sridhar Sethuram.
Okay, Sridhar, he called me. He sent me very recently. Yes.
Yes. So yes. Sridhar has been a huge supporter of Manzil. It's been 20 years. He just got in touch with me. There's a wonderful...
So he discharges his battery in the investment bank and charges his batteries in Manzil. Is that right?
I would guess so. He has to answer that. But
I'm sure Sridhar is listening to this and he sent mail and we're going to talk on Tuesday. So I'm sure I will ask him this question. Yes. I mean, you are a battery charging station actually, isn't it?
I guess so. I don't know.
Because, today there is a great void in the life of many people. Pandemic has made a lot of people live in their houses for a long time, for half year. And at that moment, now that there is a slight unlocking process, unlocking should also lead to unleashing.
Nice.
Of creative potential. And I think you are just at that right moment, the cusp, where people must now recognize all the pain that society has gone through. You know, there's no family where somebody or other has not parted company with us. So then with so much of pain in the society, many people are not finding it easy to have a closer. What do you think this music or your other students can do to help overcome this collective pathos?
I don't know, it's just how much they can reach out. That's the only limit. But again, that's not a limit, because as you see, new bands will get formed, new people will get formed. Somehow society has to find ways that this is gets supported, right? Not so I would say Manzil Mystics is really good at fundraising, but not all the organizations that are coming out. It's challenging, it's not easy. So I think if we can have the, for example, we're doing a project right now with the MSDF, Michael and Susan Dell Foundation, in which we are making, along with Manzil Mystics, we are making a lab where this kind of music can be created in-house, and we don't need to go to a studio and hire a studio, and people can get trained and even get work and jobs. What I'm seeing is that what I was going to say is that we just had an interaction, an employee engagement program with them, because they funded. Now, that was a great place, a confluence of two very different worlds that don't meet normally, unless somebody creates that context or a platform.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of bringing together would enrich both the lives, because there's resources here that can help this thing thrive. And there's enrichment and a very intangible but very important sort of meeting, fulfilling our soul kind of stuff here that you can't buy with money, right? And sure. If we can see that and create more such platforms, and not just at the small scale that, you know, we are able to do here, but everywhere people do more of this, I think this could really, we don't need some central thing to make it like expanded. It's just an idea.
But Ravi, you have either created or supported or in some sense spawned several platforms in social space, isn't it? And you have even Manzil Mystic, for example, or music. This is one aspect of the Manzil's work, but there are many other things that Manzil does. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
So interestingly, most of the enterprises that have come out of Manzil are around the arts. Well, the first one, which is about 8 years ago, was an all-woman group, not planned like that, but does quilling. It's called Craft Curry. They have this beautiful craft that they do, and all those girls are now...
And what do they make?
Quilling is basically a paper craft where strips of paper are rolled to create... Maybe, Sachi, you can find something on the internet and show, maybe craftcurry.in.
Yeah, we need to. Sachi, you have to be working hard. Any word that he's
saying, I'm on it, sir.
Find an evidence. Because, you know, people must see that. And they know that we haven't written this script. We are just trying to flow in a very honest and authentic manner, where I think, unless there's a surprise, Ravi wouldn't enjoy it. So, Ravi, tell us a little bit figuratively by the time she finds out. Tell us about what is this enterprise doing.
Yeah, so they make this paper products, about 40 different products they have now, with using this very old craft called quilling. The beautiful thing is that they're extremely aesthetic and it's changed the equations at home. And this is happens with any, when women start to go out and work and bring money home. What's that done? So that's the beautiful part there. Then there is a Dance Kabila, which is working with dance to shift. And dance is something I had a resistance to.
You mentioned that. Yes. Tell me your resistance. How did these kids overcome your resistance? You know, I like whenever anybody can overcome the resistance, because I think this world is beautiful because of these rebels. And even Ravi kind of a person can dominate sometime, and he needs to be put in his place. So tell us about this.
So I had this bias that dance is just shaking your body. It is not so meaningful. Music is different because there's lyrics and there's deep words and all that. So I was, there's this boy called Azad who really wanted, he had learned somewhere else and he wanted to start a dance class in Manzil. You know, that's great. So here's, my wife has already got this quilling.
Let me see. So how is it made? Neil, come in the front. Why are you handing it over from the side? I mean, we can't see you. We can't. Why
Sir says you have to come in
Yes,
front.
Thank you, Sachi. Thank you very much. No, I need to see. I need to understand this. I can see this rolling pin that I have seen. But how do they make this? Neha, please come in the front. Neha, please come. Neha, please come. Yes, and I want... Anya, is that right? Anya, is that right?
Alaya.
Now, show us, Neha. Or Alaya will show us. Just show us that. Please show us that. No, don't go away. Tell us, show us that. Alaya is part of the Alaya, you are going to be smiling. That's wonderful. I can see you smiling. So nice. I can see her picking up something and finding her own role. She seems to be so assertive. Yes. So I want to give her in her hand. Give her in her hand. What she wants in her hand, give her in that hand. Give her something that she wants to be. Good. Love you. Wonderful. So Ravi, show us that piece. Show us that piece. The piece that you had in hand.
Is it visible?
Yeah, it's visible. Yeah. So they have rolled this inside paper also?
Exactly.
So these leaves have been all made of paper?
These are strips of paper that have been rolled to form this little flower.
Beautiful. And it is pasted on a plastic sheet or something like that, or glass?
So inside two glasses, it becomes a coaster.
Oh.
And they've got some 40 different products like that. This is not as intricate. They can make really intricate.
What is the word you said? The spilling? What is it?
Quilling, Quilling.
Quilling, okay. I learned something today. I didn't know that. I had seen some other forms of paperwork, but not quilling. So where does it come? Where does it originate? I mean, where did it come from?
It's an ancient art form. I don't think it's from India. It's from somewhere.
It has come from somewhere. But
yeah.
So this group, what is the group name you said?
How it came to Manzil.
So tell us that.
We learned it in Calcutta, actually. We'd gone on a trip there. And we learned from some people there. And then we had this longest term volunteer we've had for 10 years. Had just come in that time, 10 years ago, and said, I'd like to volunteer, and was willing to do
anything. What was the name?
Sangeeta Bhatia. Okay.
Yeah.
And it was just that time that these girls had learned it from there and come. And, you know, these little sparks are needed. I think all I do is keep giving sparks here and there and see what lights up, where the fuel is already. So the spark I gave was, I thought she would have she has a lot of aesthetic sense coming from her own background and what she'd studied and her family and all that. I said,
Sanchi, you take over now. I mean, I will never get tired of asking questions. So now I think, Sanchi, after he explained this, you should first for 1 minute at least about how did this dance overcome the, how did Ravi overcome or the students overcome the resistance that Ravi had to dance? That is a story I would like you to follow up. And wonderful, yes, Ravi, that I've been so inspired. But please complete what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. So I told her, this group of girls have just learned it. Why don't you work with them and create something out of it? Because you also have that sense of aesthetics. They want to do something. And that's all. And then this business emerged out of that. For the first year or so, it worked under Manzil. But then I encouraged them to not be, you know, often it happens in NGOs that you create an activity, which then you keep paying people and it's happening within the organization. I said, no, they should be independent. They should have their own organization, whatever form they want. It developed into a partnership. And so that's the story of Craft Curry, how it came. And in fact, Neeraj Arya Kabir Cafe, he had a role to play. In when Quilling came, because
Kabir wanted you to dance a little bit, actually. He said, now that you've overcome the resistance, Kabir Cafe people have been asking, Rahul Bhaiya, we should ask you to dance a little bit. I don't know, but tell us. Sachi, please take over.
Bhaiya, you want to complete?
Yeah, so I was just sharing the story of how dance came in. I had this resistance, the bias against dance. And Azad had, you know, learned somewhere a little bit, and he wanted to teach in Mandir. That's how he came. First, and he says, can't we start dance classes here? And I said, but what will that lead to? How will that help? You know, children need jobs when they grow up. This is all kinds of reasons I had for not starting dance classes. And kept discouraging him. He kept talking to me about it. I kept discouraging. So we were both like really adamant. I didn't move for a few months. But what moved me was something actually outside of Manzil. You know, TED Talks were then becoming just coming up. They were still not, TEDx was not there. So they were all online. And I happened to see this TED Talk by Ken Robinson called How Schools Kill Creativity. Really funny one. If you haven't seen it, I would recommend for all of you. And really profound as well. It's got some really great ideas. He takes up the example of dance and he compares it with, sorry, professor, but professors. And he brings it up, professors dance. And he talks about intelligence and knowledge as beyond just cognitive in the head.
True.
But that of the body as well. And for me, for the first time, I realized that what a bias I was carrying. So I opened it up. I said to Azad after that, the next time he came, and I give him credit that he never stopped. he never gave up. He just kept coming back to me again and again. After 15 days, 20 days, he'd again start talking about it. He really tested my patience, I would say. But that was good because eventually we started and it was a big hit. It's still a big hit. It's classes that people really come for. I have a very different opinion of dance now, and I've seen that what children have done in Manzil. So Dance Kabila is one enterprise that has come out of Manzil. There's a travel company that has come out of Manzil, Delhi by locals. And again, very interesting. What makes me proud is it also started a Manzil-like space in the Sanjay Colony slum in Okhla. Because he found this, Pradeep found this very helpful, this kind of an experience of Manzil, he says it can reach out to more people. So let me start something there. So that's called Learning by Locals, Delhi by Locals, Learning by Locals together. There is Film Art, which makes films, very sensitive, four or five people who brought it together, led by Lalit. They're making some really beautiful, in fact, they now work for each other. So one beautiful film for Manzil Mystics has been made by Lalit, Film Art. You know, there are a lot of real nice synergies that are coming up here. So yeah, there's Art Bucket, which does graphic design. It's just, and they're supporting each other. It's really nice to see all this and how this grows. That's all.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you, Vya. I think we 1 hour is too short, and even 1.5 hours is too short. I feel like we've not even touched the tip of your journey. There is so much more left. But I think when you were mentioning all of these different initiatives that children and Manzil alumni have started, one thing that I'm also thinking is how, you know, you've also given, it's almost like, you know, how a banyan tree grows and then it grows in multiple places and still everything is very much connected to the source. And I think that's what, to me, Manzil is, that everyone's still very much connected to the source. We have a lot of questions pouring in and more to come. So I'll just, you know, anyone who has questions for Ravi Bhaiya, then you can email to ask@servicespace.org or put it on the comment section of the webcast form or the live stream page. So Bhaiya, I think the first, till more questions come in, there have been a few questions which have been related to your journey of unlearning, you know. So one is you unlearning from being a part of Indian Institute of Management and then now starting an NGO, and like Sir also touched upon it, that, you know, people must have thought many things about you, but that confusion, and how did you deal with that confusion of, you know, being in a structured environment, talking about money? I'm sure most of your friends would have picked up really big, you know, high paying jobs. You know, how did you get to this place where you said it was okay and I will keep following this path? And, you know, there are also many questions that have come up with your, which is regarding your relationship with money. So both those things, if you can share.
Yeah, I think from childhood, this different family that I experienced with Sonia being there, my mother, amongst all the women of that age, my chachi, masi, nobody went out to work. They were all house makers, whereas my mother was doing that. I got comfortable with this, you know, being different and yet being part of a group. I didn't have to conform to belong. I could belong without conforming, could be different. That helped me. So for me, money was just, you know, it was not something I wanted to like build my life around and aim for. It was something that for me, once I heard the story and I really liked the analogy there. So it takes money, it takes petrol, right? So gasoline to run a car, right? So that's what it feeds off, right? The car burns petrol, you fill up petrol and it burns petrol. That's how it moves. But what do you do with the car is decided by the person who's driving it. And that person doesn't eat the petrol. It's not petrol that runs that person. Something else runs that person. So then there's this thing of our consciousness or soul, whatever. There's something else that feeds it. The money is required for the body and soul to be together and running. So we have to figure that out to really be happy. And for me, that was part of the journey. At one time, I thought if I had I could just travel, that would just feed my soul. But when I read the book, Fukuoka's book, I felt if I would become a farmer, then it would feed my soul. And then when the children came, I knew this would feed my soul, and that kept feeding my soul. So money became just a zariya, just an instrument to allow that to happen. And therefore, I don't think I've had that sort of comparison confusion. I just needed a path forward to be able to do what I wanted to do. That came thanks to those 2 months, my summer training. And then it just kept opening out after that. I do want to share.
And I think, Bhaiya, there's also this.
I do want to share two things that I got from that summer that I think have really informed further, because the question was also about unlearning. So one of the things that happened to me during that summer was people were, obviously they could see I was not local. I was not from the village. So they were interested. Everybody's interested. What are you doing here? How come you're here? I told them I've come to, you know, learn. And they said, "Acha, what do you do in the city?" So I'm studying. What class are you studying? So my thing was I'm studying in an MA. I thought they would not understand an MBA. But at that time in 1990, people said, "What is an MA?" In our village, we counted like 1, 2, 3. So can you tell us like that? And I was like, okay, let me do a quick mental math. I'm in class 16. And they were like, 16? What's there to study so much? That was one experience I had early on. And then they could also see, I had a lot of questions about things that I was seeing around me. And then a typical question was, what's growing in the field? And that's a stupid question if you see it from their point of view, because somebody who's never been to school will be able to identify the crop. And here's a person who's studying in 16, for God's sake, and doesn't know that. And they must have found it strange. I also realized that there's a lot of things out there that I had no knowledge about. For example, I realized how the something we always learn is something that was good for everyone, like the nationalization of forests in, I think, 1951. Just independent India did that. But how that created havoc in the lives of people who had customary but unwritten rights over forest produce. And they were suddenly deprived of their source of earning, which is what had happened in that Ghat Kshetra. And a market had come in its place, which was like really brutal about people's livelihoods. You know, they would be selling just grass for a wild grass called bhabad. The prices would go up so much that people needed to buy it to make this rope. That was what their economy was dependent on, the people I was staying with. A lot of new learnings there. I realized one thing, that you can't learn everything in books. In fact, the books can mislead you. And you've got to go out there and experience. Mark Twain's words rang true. He has this lovely quote, says, never let school interfere with your education. I thought my school had interfered a lot with my education. I became open for the first time to learn from people who had supposedly less knowledge than me, because they didn't study so much and didn't go to such pedigree institutions. And I think this healthy skepticism around degrees and the pedigrees, I think came from there. And now being, you know, open to learning anywhere from anybody without looking at through the lens of, because people get different opportunities to learn. Not everybody gets opportunities that I got.
Yeah.
That's one big takeaway from it. The other big takeaway was I lost fear of what will happen in future, because I saw actually it doesn't take so much to survive, to live. These are all notions in our head. I must have this, I must have that.
Yeah.
And that really helped me to make those choices.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if I think of just myself and how many times a restless me has come to you asking, ki kya kare? Paise kahan se kamaye? Like, where should we earn from? How should it happen? All of those things. And I think your constant, even in terms of ideas, your constant approach has been karke dekho. Do it and see it for yourself. Because unless you do it, you won't know. And that's something that I've always seen you, heard you tell me. One other question that's coming up, which is asked by Himanshu Gupta, is that what is your message to the youth regarding their own livelihood sustenance while being in the social sector? Like, a lot of us have a problem or this dilemma, ki shall we take care of the family and the needs of the family, or shall we do what our heart says, which is the social work? And how do we marry the both? Or, you know, what would be your advice to young people?
Yeah, we have to meet needs. Needs have a tendency to sort of creep. There's a creeping problem. And we start calling other things also as needs. So what is our needs? The more boundary there is, you know, the better. So the 8 months I worked in Canada, I saved up like crazy. You know, I was saving 70 to 80% of my salary every month. I had saved, by the end of those 8 months, I'd saved more money than people had saved in like 10 years, right? And I'm not, you know, there's no boast around there. It's just that you cut where you cut. Why do you do that? Because people told me, now don't convert money, Canadian dollar into Indian rupee when you're spending. Don't do it because you're living here. So that doesn't work anymore. But my thought was, no, it works. Why does it work? Because I'm going to use this money back in India. So if I save that $40 in my bus pass and instead cycle to work, which is what I started doing after 3 months, that $40 converts into much more money in India, and that will help me. That is how I saved 70 to 80%. And that money that I earned in 8 months lasted me 8 years when I came back. Because again, I stretched it and spent less. Because you can do a lot with, you know, less money. You just have to get more creative. And creativity is all around us. Look at people around us. There's a huge inspiration. I was just telling my wife recently, you know, which percentage bracket do we belong in terms of our income in India? Because somebody had shared this chart on Facebook and asked, there is one of the problems, and what he had shared is one of the problems is, I'll share later what he shared. So I said, guess where we belong. And we belong in the top 1%. And what that person who had shared was middle class. What people who call middle class, they're actually upper class in India. Our notion of middle class is, you know, all wonky. We probably don't realize the extent in this country. Like the bottom 20%, the average income is 7,000 rupees a month. Right? If it's above a lakh or something a month, it's already 1 lakh, some 70,000 or something a month. It's already in the top 1%. So top 10%, you know, everybody who's here listening to this would be in the top 10%. So we can be really creative about money. This is one thing I would say gives freedom to everyone. People think if we have money, we have freedom. I beg to differ. Because your needs turning into aspirations, material aspirations will catch up. And whatever amount you earn, it's just things just outside your balloon of what you can buy exist. And that'll say, I just need a little bit more. I don't have enough. Right? So there's no freedom in earning more. The freedom is in really being very ruthless. And what do I need? Do I need it? No. Do I need it? No. 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 Keep cutting it out. And that gives you freedom. And then you can make those choices. Now, that's one part of it. The other part of it, you know, if you look at the nonprofit sector professionally, it's possible, much more possible today than it was earlier. And there are many other ways of earning as well. I work with, also volunteer with CreateNet Education. That's built around, the whole thing is built around the idea that you spend X amount of time earning, but you give 1 day in a week volunteering. And we're working with 1,000 Delhi government schools with only one employee. The NGO does no fundraising. I mean, there is some funds required for that one employee salary, but there's only one employee. Everybody else is volunteer donor. So there are many different ways you can create it. There are skills you learn that will be useful to earn in one context and can be given without looking at money as the payoff in another context. That's what volunteers also do. So there's a lot of ways you can do it. I would say cut your needs and be more creative.
I was just, there's another question which is related. It's not exactly related to this, but I'll read it. It says that, can you talk a bit about how your thought process about scale in social work has evolved? You know, you come from a highly educated background and you have all the skills to be strategic and scale Manzil. So why are you not doing that?
I think in the beginning, I was defensive about us, you know, remaining small. And I would talk about the depth, and you can't do both, those kinds of things. Since the question is about how it's evolved, so I'm taking on that journey. But over time, I realized that defensiveness is not required. It's more to do with my nature, swabhav. And I would really say, you know, people often do this thing of thinking of this is how it should be done, as if we are some outside force that is looking at us also and everybody and. It's a kind of neutral thing, but we are all human beings with limits, with dispositions, with tendencies, with strengths, with some things which are not our strengths. And I think if we do what we are sort of meant for, our swabhav, and we are good at that, then it anyway keeps you alive, and it you know, does the best you can offer. And mine is more, my tendency is to, one of the reasons I've not been able to scale is I see so much improvement that needs to be done in what I'm already doing. And I can't think of adding when that improvement. So I'm just grasping for time. How do I do it? Right? But in a very beautiful way, and there's a third part that I'll come to, in a beautiful way, there is this scaling which is more nature-like, which is the scaling of the seeds, right? No one plant grows to be a super plant covering the entire planet, but at one point it stops and it seeds something else, and those seeds grow and they seed more, and there's no limit to how much. As one of my inspirations, this is, which is this person called Visheshwar Dutt Saklani, who's no more, who just passed away a few years ago. But for 60 years, he single-handedly planted trees in around his village, in Uttarakhand. You know, I know lakhs of trees are growing because of him. There's a whole forest. He used to always say that if all the chana gram from the world had vanished, and if somebody found just one seed of gram and planted it, very soon it'll be a fistful of gram, and then planted that, you know, in a very short time, it would be feeding the world again. So there is that nature model of scale. I think I'm more sort of attuned to that, and which is what I'm seeing happening in Manzil as well. That is all I can say.
Ah, beautiful. I mean, it's interesting also because I've seen you work with so many principles, and that was a scale model and yet not a scale model, and seeing Manzil, which is just like a forest in some ways. Like it keeps growing, and it grows in different ways. You don't have to define anything. And it's just the Sahajta that Professor spoke about is very much present. I think we might have time for one or two more questions. What are your Manzil? Sanchi Chandana asked, Manzil is a community and not just a classroom. Looking forward, what are your personal practices and social practices, tools, techniques to work through conflict, internal and outside?
There are always many perspectives to anything. And as humans, you know, as conditioning, we're conditioned to automatically react in one way. Each one may be different, but we have these automatic. And I think when we look at conflict, both internal and external, we have to slow down and suspend our favored way of looking at it, the view that we have, to be able to see other views and not be in a hurry to decide which is the right one, because each one of them may have different amounts of truth. It's a practice that I think I unconsciously had it earlier on, and it was also very rudimentary. But as I got more exposed to people talking about it, writing about it, about different perspectives, I have also consciously tried to cultivate. So how else can I see this situation? And this applies to both internal and external conflicts. So I think if we can slow it down and go deeper and find, very often it's the same common humanity expressing itself in different forms. And now I'm talking of external conflicts. Right? Both of them want the same thing, but they have a different view or belief about how the world works. And that has come from both their conditioning. So if we can talk about it, human beings are also very good, as when we can really listen to each other, then we can find resonance with what the other person is saying. Both can find resonance, and something will get resolved there. Often it gets resolved. It just takes more time. It's worth putting that time. I think one of the things we do as a society is just, you know, put the conflicts under the carpet. And it starts from childhood. If a teacher comes and two children are fighting, say, no, don't fight. It's not good to fight. Stop fighting. Okay, stop fighting. Ab haath milao. Now shake hands and become friends again. And if they do that gesture, just the outward behavior, the teacher says, fine, very good, go. And we didn't even go into the underlying reason for the conflict. So is it going to get over? It's a bit like coming into a room which is smelling like some rat has died there, so it's smelling bad. And you just do a room freshener and say, okay, problem solved. You have to get that dead rat out. You have to go look for it. I think that's what has been my practice. Help people also do that. People want to do it. People don't do it because they don't see. It's not part of their sort of learning. And I see opportunities for that all around me all the time.
Beautiful, man. Yeah, I mean, there's so many questions and I'm just like trying to figure out which one to ask next. But one question that I had, and this is something you wanted to speak about in this talk also, is your connection with children. And, you know, whether, because you spoke also about an example of the children, like, you know, are we listening to the children? What are they saying? And, you know, there's something around that that you were interested in sharing about also. So what is an advice that you'd like to give people, adults, in terms of listening to children or understanding children?
Yeah, the first thing, I think we as a society are too caught up in the idea that children shouldn't make wrong decisions, because that could harm them only. It's out of our love. We want to protect them. Now, what's a wrong decision? Who defines what is wrong? Well, again, it's very easy to say, you know, I'm an adult. I know what's good for the children. So they should just obey, right? And I'll tell them what to do and they'll obey. That'd be good for them. But there's a very big danger in that, the danger of not becoming responsible. And when I talk of this, you know, I've heard it, and I'm sure you heard it as well. Somebody would say, a parent would say, my child is so responsible. He's so obedient. To me, that strikes as a complete contradiction. How can obedience be a sign of responsibility? It can't. They're opposites. And I think of the Nuremberg trials, where officer after officer of the Nazi army, the German army of that time, they were really surprised why these trials were even happening. And they were getting up and saying, but we were following orders, obeying, right? We have a chain of command in the army, we are following orders. So what if we killed 6 million Jews? We were following orders, we did nothing wrong. Now, if following orders, this is their way of saying, we are not responsible for what happened. How can you blame us? We were only following orders. And that's what happens here as well. I've heard some people say they will go for arranged marriage. You know, I've actually heard these words. They may fall in love and they'll have all that, but they're young people. We'll go for arranged marriage eventually. Why? Because marriage is a gamble anyway. Love marriage or arranged marriage. If something goes wrong, then arranged marriage, at least I will say, well, you are blamed. You're to be blamed, parents. You chose the girl for me. If it's a love marriage, they'll say, you are responsible. You chose the girl, right? So we want to evade responsibility there as well. So let children make decisions.
Yeah.
Let's have them make decisions. They may not have good judgment, but as the saying goes, good judgment comes from experience and experience comes from bad judgment. So don't try to short circuit the process.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting. In childcare institutions, we always say that, you want these children who may have committed offenses to go out as responsible citizens, but you're not giving them any responsibility in the institution to actually do that. So very much in line with what you're saying, and I totally agree. Choice and agency, yeah, definitely. So I think we can bring Vipin in. Vipin is here with us and he's here to sing a song. And Vipin is a Manzil student, has a long association since 2005 with Manzil. And he's a songwriter, composer, artist, actor, so many things. Vipin is also someone who's giving back in so many ways, because he used to come to the Dongri Children's Home every Sunday to work with the children I work with. And so to me, this was like a great way to bring Vipin in. Vipin, can you turn on your video and please sing for us today? And then we can go back to Bhaiya.
I can see, Sachi, you've been up to mischief behind my back getting Vipin here. Thank you.
Ah, little bit. Why not?
Achha, Sachi ne mujhe bataya ki ye aapka favorite hai. Mujhe nahi pata tha. मैं गाता हूँ हो हे इनका भेद बता मेरे अवधू अच्छी करनी कर ले तू डाली फूल जगत के माही जा देखूँ तू का तू हे इनका भेद बता मेरे अब तू अच्छी करनी कर ले तू डाली फूल जगत के माही चांदे हुआ तू का तू चोरों के संग चोरी करता बदमाशों में भेड़ो तू चोरी करके तू भग जावे पकड़ने वाला तू का तू हे इनका भेद बता मेरे अब तू हो 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 हाथी में हाथी बन बैठो चीटी में है छोटो तू हुए महावत ऊपर बैठन हाकण वाला तू का तू हे हाथी में हाथी बन बैठो चीटी में है छोटो तू हुए महावत ऊपर बैठन हाकण वाला तू का तू हाँ इनका भेद बता मेरे अब तू अच्छी करनी कर ले तू डाली फूल जगत के माही जा देखूं हाँ तू का तू नर नारी में एक विराजे हो 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 नर नारी में एक विराजे वो दुनिया में जीते तू बालक वो के रोवण लागे राखण वाला तू का तू रे बालक हो के रोवण लागे राखण वाला तू का तू इनका भेद बता मेरे अब तू हो हो
थैंक यू It's a beautiful bhajan from Malwa.
Thank you so much, Vipin.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Sachi. मेरे को ऐसे invite करने के लिए मैं तो सो ही रहा था मुझे पता नहीं था.
जाग गए तुमने हम सबको जगा दिया. वाह वाह.
Vipin एक ऐसा बंदा है कि जिसको मैं बोलूँ ना आधी रात में कि आपको आके बच्चों के लिए कुछ करना है तो वो करता है. And it's not never has he said no to me. And that's just the seeds of Manzil. In many ways, and of course, Vipin himself, but it is we are witness to this. The other thing, एक और क्योंकि community इतना बड़ा है और ये पेड़ इतना बड़ा है तो एक से काम नहीं चलेगा तो मैं अब नीरज को invite करना चाहूंगी. That's the second surprise, भैया. And Neeraj, you are most welcome to come on. Please turn on your video.
Namaste, भैया रवि भैया. Hi Vipin.
Hi Neeraj. Hi.
Sir, namaskar.
Namaskar, bhaiya. Namaskar. Namaskar. मैं बस गई तुम्हारी बात.
मैं एक्चुअली नेचर के साथ ही हूँ. अभी पेड़ पौधों के उगाने की बात हो रही है और मंजिल एक बहुत बड़ा पेड़ है जिसमें बहुत सारे बीज थे. जैसे विपिन है, मैं हूँ, भैया ने बात की मंजिल मिस्टिक के डांस कबीला की, कबीर कैफे भी उसी की उपज है, हमारा एक ग्रुप है. और ये सब जो भी हम कर रहे हैं ये आपकी बदौलत और रवि भैया की बदौलत है कि आप लोगों ने इस तरह से बीज बोए हैं और वो आपकी छाया में है. जब भी हम मेरे को कभी भी प्रॉब्लम होते हैं मैं रवि भैया के पास ही आता हूँ. और आई एम सो हैप्पी सांची, थैंक यू सो मच फॉर हैविंग मी. और मैं एक भजन है जो हम एक आजकल गाने बना रहे हैं और एक नया एल्बम करने की कोशिश कर रहे हैं तो उसका एक भजन है, कह रहा है क्यों भटके बाहर क्यों भटके थारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके बाहर क्यों भटके. और महेशा राम जी का भजन है, कोशिश करूंगा भैया. वो क्यों भटके बाहर क्यों भटके क्यों भटके बाहर क्यों भटके थारू राम हृदय मां बाहर क्यों भटके. आई एम ऑडिबल?
यस
नीरज. ऐसा ऐसा हीर ला खट माझे कहिए ऐसा ऐसा हीर ला खट माझे कहिए चोरी बिना हीरा कौन परखे चोरी बिना हीरा कौन कान पर के थारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, थारो अल्लाह हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, क्यों भटके बाहर क्यों भटके, क्यों भटके बाहर क्यों भटके, थारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, थारो अल्लाह हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके। अगली लाइन आपके लिए रवि भैया। हम सबके अंदर ना एक केवाड़ लगा हुआ है और जिसमें ताला लगा है, और अनिल सर और आप सर वो खोलते हैं हमारे तालों को। क्या कहा है? ऐसा ऐसा ही बड़ा ऐसा ऐसा की वाड़ इवड़े पे कहिए, ऐसा ऐसा की वाड़ इवड़े पे जड़िए, गुरुजी बिना ताला कौन खोले, गुरुजी बिना ताला कौन खोवे, थारो राम हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, थारो अल्लाह हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, ओ थारो यीशु हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, ओ थारो नानक हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, ओ थारो कबीर हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, ओ थारो मंजिल हृदय में बाहर क्यों भटके, ओ तुम्हार क्यों भटके, ओ बाहर क्यों भटके, ओ बाहर क्यों भटके। Thank you, Raviya.
Thank you, Neeraj. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
थैंक यू साची फॉर हैविंग मी। एंड दोबारा बोलना चाहूंगा, रवि भैया से बहुत सारी चीजें सीखने को मिलती हैं हम सबको, और मेरी भी जिंदगी का जहाँ पे भी आजकल मैं कुछ कर पा रहा हूँ वो मंजिल की बदौलत है और रवि भैया की बदौलत है। हम मैं रह नहीं पाता हूँ वहाँ पे क्योंकि मैं दूसरे शहर में हूँ, लेकिन जब भी मौका मिलता है, हम सिर्फ कठिनाई जब होती है ना हमारे पास, तभी हम भैया को याद करते हैं। वो है ना कि सुख में दुख में सुमिरन सब करे, सुख में करे ना कोई, सुख में सुमिरन करे तो दुख काहे कोए। जब हमारे खुशी होती है तब रवि भैया को हम याद नहीं करते हैं, जब हम दुखी होते हैं तो हम रवि भैया के पास जाते हैं। तो अब इससे कोशिश करेंगे जब भी खुशी भी हो तो आपसे शेयर करते रहेंगे।
अमेजिंग, थैंक यू सो मच नीरज, थैंक यू विपिन,
थैंक यू साची,
गाने के लिए एंड गाने के लिए, और इट इज अ वे ऑफ पेइंग इट फॉरवर्ड, सो थैंक यू सो मच आप दोनों को। हम ऑलरेडी थोड़ा 8 मिनट ओवर है, सो आई डोंट वांट टू वेट टू लॉन्ग। भैया एनी फाइनल क्लोजिंग थॉट्स फ्रॉम योर एंड, प्रोफेसर अनिल सर फ्रॉम योर एंड, एनीथिंग दैट वी वुड लाइक टू क्लोज द सेशन विद?
आई थिंक द स्प्राउट्स दैट वी हैव सीन विपिन नीरज एंड ऑल द अदर्स दैट यू हैव कम टुडे are a testimony to the creative potential that Manzil has unleashed. And I think there's a lesson in Manzil for everybody who wants to participate in this service space, to want to participate in the space where Samvedana leads to sprouting or Sajanshilta. When Ravi said there is so much creativity around, I think that is the manifest. This is a manifestation when so many kids coming from such difficult backgrounds in the childhood and the social context have become torch bearer of this philosophy of sharing, caring, and daring. God bless you all.
Thank you.
May I say, can I chat? I just want to say that I have received, you know, multiplied, I don't know how many times, whatever I've offered. And so my one learning from life is that whatever you value, just offer it. And I think what Buddha has called it, a wise selfishness. So this distinction binary we have of selflessness and selfishness, I think doesn't work. It's too oversimplified. In fact, if we really get deeper, then we'll find that what we give away is actually not giving away. It comes multiplied many fold.
Idan namam.
Really enriches your life.
Idan namam. It was not mine. Who am I to give it? You know, it's a Vedic thought. Idan namam. So you are wonderful. Wonderful thought. Wonderful, Ravi. Wonderful. Who are we to give? We don't own it. It was yours and we gave it back to you. Wonderful. Sachi, thank you so much. Rohit and all of you.
Beautiful. Abhaya, the last question I would like to ask is on behalf of Service Space, how can the service-based community support the work you do, you know, your journey, or anything else that you feel we can support in any way?
I think we just need to you know, multiply a thought and its experience. Just a thought will be just too many words. And the more we can, I was talking about creating these platforms that people meet, and Service Space is already doing it. But maybe we can come up with ideas to do it in ways that it, Service Space is not doing it, but in my experience works well. In any case, we are trying to do a nature's way of expansion. I'm not interested in growing Manzil as an organization, but I'm interested in growing Manzil as an idea. And whatever I've learned, I'm happy to offer that to anyone and share. Sridhar brought in recently an organization in Bombay, much bigger than ours, but they're interested in taking some of our learnings and sort of weaving it into their work. I'd be very happy to do that. And if Service Space can help with that, taking the idea and experiences forward, not just the bare idea. I think that's, we'll be doing work for ourselves, not for someone else, but ourselves as a larger whole.
It's a much expected answer. Thank you so much, Vaya. And I, just for taking out this time, being here. Thank you. Thank you, audience, everyone who's listening, Neeraj, Vipin. So if it's okay, we'll just close with a minute of silence. 1 minute, Shanti, se hum close karenge. So
I really want to thank sir. We'll all just close. Like you said, he's going to ask me tough questions. He did. And the grilling he didn't do at that time, he's doing now. So
he kept you on your toes, Vaya. Just the way you do it to us.
Yeah. And I'm really happy. You know, I'm really grateful, sir, that you consented to come to talk to me, and I really enjoyed doing that. And also, Sachi, you, because it's like seeing three generations, right? I learned so much from sir, and then you know, you say you got from me. So that's something that I've found. It's a really nice experience to be here to talk to all of you. And everybody behind the scene, who's nobody seen, you know, Rohit, Rahul, who organized this, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
And Sonia and your mother.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone. So we'll just close with a minute of silence. And so 1 minute, Dhyan Karin. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.